You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. Well, we're asking you about your favorite streaks, sports streaks or otherwise. The Celtics lost their career record streak last night to the Lakers. Their 19-1 record
must have been
stay in the books.
Disappointing.
Yeah, Kobe Bryant kind of stomped them out there in L.A. But what's your favorite streak?
Yeah, hi. This is Bill from Hawthorne, New Jersey, and I think the penultimate streak in sports was Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak. Where at the end of that 54-game hitting streak, he missed one game and then went on and ripped off another long streak.
In fact, that is called the streak, DiMaggio streak. Fabulous.
Thank you, John.
877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. We're going to continue our discussion of sports, beginning with the Celtics, with our own Jay Cowett, who is the person on this show, I think it's fair to say, who tracks sports for us. He's sort of a cross between a Uber expert and an Uber fan, I think. He's also our broadcast engineer here on the program. Jay, thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem. It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. What's your favorite streak?
My favorite streak, well, you know, our caller just mentioned the DiMaggio streak, which has all the...
That's the famous
You
one,
know,
yeah.
the hullabaloo about right. it. But Johnny Vandermeer, who played for the Cincinnati Reds in the first half of the last century, had two straight no-hitters in 1938.
Oh, that's...
And to me, that's the most impossible streak to break out of anyone. It's also the
right.
shortest. It's only
shortest,
two, which
right,
makes
right,
it
right.
kind of poetic.
But but anyone who knows anything about baseball knows two no-hitter. One no-hitter is amazing enough, but two in a row is a mind-blower.
And to break it, someone would have to pitch right. three in a row, right. which is almost impossible.
Right. And nobody pitches three games in a row anyway anymore. It even makes it to the sixth inning anymore. Well, let's talk basketball. What do you think the significance is of this Lakers-Celtics game yesterday, which seemed like a replay of the NBA Finals and all of a sudden made it look, even though the Celtics seemed unstoppable, like, wow, we could have a really interesting playoffs this year?
Oh, I think it makes it great. You know, you had the Lakers-Celtics last year in the thing that makes great rivals is carrying it over. It's not just having one year where they're up against each other. It's having multiple years or a couple years in a row where they carry this over and they carry this anger and hate over. And you could tell last night the Lakers wanted this. The Lakers wanted revenge. You could see Paul Gasol, who had a rough finals last year against the Celtics, came out and went 3-for-3 from the floor in the final quarter, 3-for-3 from the free throw line, was banging his chest.
Mm.
You could tell they're into this. It's good for tepid NBA fans. You want to see
right.
these two teams as your rivals. You want to see the Celtics. You want to see the Lakers. And you want to see it be competitive. Because quite frankly, the finals last year, you know, the Celtics
yeah.
ran over them.
Celtics
a little
just stomped. And what did Kobe say last night? He said
malaise.
It was time. They were due to have a malaise game.
A malaise kind of a game.
I'm interested in that, too. When you have a team like the Celtics who won so many in a row, who have the best start in NBA history at 27-3 now, does one loss throw them off the tracks a little bit because they're so not used to it happening?
Well, it's early. I mean, people like to say the NBA has two seasons. There's the regular season and there's the playoffs, which go endlessly. But there was more basketball this holiday weekend than there's been in decades. I mean, they really concentrated a lot of games both yesterday on Christmas and all through the weekend.
Well, I think they see it as kind of their window to really pick up a whole bunch of a fan base that they're losing to the NFL right now. You know, NFL has Thanksgiving, and they've made that a three-game day. And now with the NBA, they have an opportunity where there's not baseball going on, where football's nearing the end of the season, where nobody watches hockey anyway. So they have So they have an opportunity to really get out there and show what they're about, and they put their best game probably of the regular season on the day.
All right, well, let's shift over to the NFL because a lot of people are going to be paying attention. The huge sports headlines are NFL this weekend, and a lot of the diehard fans of teams like the Jets and the Baltimore Ravens and the Miami Dolphins and the Patriots are going to be doing that complicated end-of-season NFL math, which determines how the heck you get into the playoffs. The Jets have probably the most complicated situation here.
Well, insofar as they have to deal with a lot of emotions to get where they want to be anyway. To get into the playoffs, the Jets have to win and then hope for a New England or Baltimore loss, but they also have to go against their old friend, Chad Pennington, who they let go to Miami in the preseason when they signed Brett Favre, and I saw somebody compare Brett Favre to a Ferrari and Chad Pennington to a Pinto at the beginning of the year, that the Jets threw out the Pinto to take in this Ferrari.
Well, what they're discovering is that the Ferrari was from the 1950s, apparently. That's the problem. Let's hear.
I don't know if that's so fair. Favre has had a very good season,
Slept,
or at least a better season than what many expected.
It's
9-6 is respectable.
It's interesting, and he brought the Jets from a 4-win team to now a 9-win team, and he's made the Pro Bowl, but the story behind that is that maybe he doesn't deserve to be there. Chad Pennington, who came from the Jets and went to Miami, has brought a 1-15 team to almost the brink of a division title. And he's also played better ball. He's thrown less interceptions. He's handled a very efficient Miami offense that's only had 13 turnovers all year. Brett Favre has had 6 turnovers himself in the last 4 games.
Well, you can hear it in their voices. Let's play Favre and then Pennington, and you can decide for yourself who's the whiny one and who's the one who's on top of the world at this point.
Exactly.
Whether I walk away today, 3 years ago, I can't look back and say, boy, that's one thing I wanted to do. One play, one season is not going to, it's not going to make a difference.
Now that's Favre.
That's Favre.
Not exactly.
Whiny Favre.
Not exactly the leader you want. And here's Pennington from this week.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Our whole team's excited about having the chance to be able to have one shot into the playoffs. And that's what you work so hard for the whole season to get to this point, to have an opportunity to play an extra game.
And the Dolphins win, they're in, right?
Dolphins win, they're in, and they win their division, which would be a record turnaround. They were the worst team in the league last year. They get Barcells in, they get Tony Sperano in from the Cowboys, and they've turned it all around.
And again, just like we were talking about with the NBA, this is a great rivalry. This is what the NFL needs. This is what sports needs right now in this complex, sort of disturbing economic environment. Jay Cowett, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks so much, guys.
Jay Cowett, our broadcast engineer and sports tracker here on The Takeaway. Now,